Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You're listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast brought to you by Nottinghamshire Live.
Hello and welcome to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast from Nottinghamshire Live. My name is Matt Davis, hosting as usual, and I'm joined today by former Red striker Nathan Tyson, returning to the podcast. Nathan, hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you all doing?
Yes, good, thanks, good. And our second guest, also returning to the podcast after a very long absence, is BBC Radio Nottingham's Forest commentator, Colin Frey. Colin, hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Hi, Matt. Hi, Nathan. Thanks for having me.
Hiya. How
are you? Very good to have you both. Thanks for joining me. We're going to talk about the latest, not, I was going to say chapter of misery. It's not that bad, but it's not been great for Forest this season. We're almost over the line, the penultimate game, a 0-0 draw at Sheffield Wednesday. Nathan, you've seen extended highlights, and Colin, you've seen it in full, as have I. So, Colin, why don't you kick us off and just give us your thoughts on the penultimate chapter of the season?
Well, very similar to the season, really, I thought, on Saturday. I thought, I mean, the first thing I'd say is I thought Forest pretty much put their lot in. There was no question of end-of-season syndrome, I didn't think, from Forest. I thought, you know, Chris Hughton had picked his full-strength side. So there's no question of making things any easier for Sheffield Wednesday to put more pressure on Derby or anything like that. But I thought it was very similar to so many other games in the space of this season that we've seen. You know, Forest have a decent spell. I thought it was tight. It wasn't great quality in the early stages. Then Forest had a decent 10 minutes before half time. Got their opportunity from the penalty spot. Couldn't take it. Good save, I thought, from the goalkeeper, from Kieran Westwood. And then they pay for not being able to score when they're on top in the game. And on this occasion, their defence, again, has stood firm. They've kept themselves another clean sheet and it's got themselves a point away from home. But in so many ways, it sums up the season. Fail to score when they're having a good spell and therefore fail to win the game. I think if they score at that point, if the penalty goes in or they score at any point when they're on top in that spell just before half-time, then it's a different game. But you can say that about so many of Forest games this season. And once again, they don't get the 3 points because they're unable to find a finish.
Yeah, I'll ask you about the penalty in a minute, Nathan, from a striker's point of view. But does that ring true with what you saw of the highlights, what Colin's saying there?
Yeah, it certainly is. It just seemed to me, I was even a bit disappointed with Sheffield Wednesday, to be honest. I thought they would have had even more go at it, considering fighting for their lives. But it just seems like Forest are kind of waiting for something to happen. When I was watching the highlights as well, a lot of possession in the middle of the park and not enough penetration through them, not enough crosses, not enough forward runs for my liking. But having said that, you know, I don't want to be too negative or anything because they've got a manager now and they've got a squad that is capable to finish higher, especially, well, obviously next season. But yeah, it would have been nice for Forest to get the win on Saturday and get as many points as you can. But it's like Colin said, it's just, I've watched a few of their games this season and he's hit the nail on the head. It has been. It's been a problem this year, especially with the goals, lack of them. But that's going to turn. I believe with the manager that you have now, I think next season is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I suppose what concerned me was that, like Colin said, Forest put their lot in and still couldn't beat a Sheffield Wednesday team that were really, I thought they were really dire, actually. They looked like a team that's going down and I thought they were very tentative from the start, which was disappointing from a Forest point of view, but they never look like losing, certainly. Before we talk about Nathan's Grabban's penalty, it's Nathan's birthday, so we should say happy birthday, Nathan Tyson.
Oh, happy birthday, Nathan.
Who's joining us on his birthday, which is very kind of him, so we're grateful to Nathan and his wife.
That's how bad things are. I can't even enjoy a birthday.
No, we're pleased you're here.
No,
thank you, Mrs. Tyson.
It's great to be here. Yeah.
Right. Graben's penalty then. I mean, I've seen Graben take bad penalties. I didn't think it was that bad. From a striker's point of view, what did you make of it, Nathan?
First thing for me, the run-up for me, I just think it's too short. So you can't generate enough power for it. I think if he hits that further in the corner with more power, that goes in, even if the keeper does make a fingertips to it. I just think it was too... Westwood could really read it too easily. I think if you're having a short run-up, it's usually whip it to the other side. But, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on Danny yet, because I thought he's a fantastic player. I like him. I think what he's got and what he's brought to Forest is exactly what they need. So I don't want to be too critical on him, but I just think maybe players are different. I take a really long run up and charge at the ball, because I want a lot of pace on the ball. If you don't get the accuracy, you've got the pace, at least we'll beat the keeper. So, but it's a good save from the keeper. Let's not take it away there. But I just think it was too easy to read for my liking.
Did you think he was going to score, Colin? I mean, I don't know what his percentage ratio. I should have looked this up. It was probably about 70%, 60%, isn't it? Were you confident he was going to put it away?
I thought he would. I thought he would in this instance. But you know, you're right. I mean, we've seen him hit some penalties that have been pretty mediocre. But I thought this one was a good one. I've got to say, having seen it again, it's not quite as right in the corner as I thought it was at the time.
Yeah.
Because he stretched so far across Westwood, I thought at the time it is right as close to the post as you can get it, actually. It's probably not absolutely adjacent to the post, which I thought it was on Saturday when I saw it in real time. I still think it's an excellent save. And I think what I said on Saturday, I'd probably stand by, which is that some penalties are missed and some penalties are saved. And this one very definitely goes down, I think, as a save. And you could almost tell from Westwood having conceded the penalty and got his team in what would have been the mire, really. You know, they'd have gone down if they hadn't, you know, if they'd lost on Saturday. So he knew he'd got his team in trouble, albeit it was the back header that really got them in trouble. But having committed the foul, you could almost see he was determined he was going to keep it out. So I'd still give credit to the goalkeeper, I think. But as I say, you know, when you get a penalty, you kind of need to score, don't you? Especially when you're having that spell on top in a game where if you do score, you probably go on and win the game.
Mm-hmm. No, what's it like being in a team, Nathan, that's mid-table, not got a lot to play for ostensibly, as Forest have? Did you ever find, or do you find you still play that, you know, does your motivation drop at all? Is it hard to really be as up for the game as you would have been early season or not?
I guess it is, really. Let's not shy away from it. Your mind's already thinking about next season, especially if you're a player out of contract. You're thinking, well, am I going to get a contract here next season? So your mindset changes. You think, yeah, I'm going to try and win myself a contract. But by that time, decisions have already been made. And everyone's all thinking about next year, even the manager's thinking about next year. Sometimes you see a young lad's been thrown in and stuff, and that's fair enough. You've got nothing to play for. So your mindset does change. You're thinking, the way the world is at the moment, people are obviously thinking about, you know, summer break, you know, spending time with family and stuff. So it does get to that point. It's a bit of a grind, and you know, maybe you can see it in some of the Forest players, but that's up and down to everyone in the country who's finished mid-table. So everyone's thinking about next year rather than thinking about what they can do now.
It's interesting what Nathan says, isn't it, Colin, about uncertainty around quite a lot of players. They've got five on loan, Christie, Garner, Krivinovic, Knockhart, etc. There's question marks over players like Graben. Do you think that might be subconsciously filtering into this team as the season kind of meanders out then?
I think even like Nathan said, it's almost just like human, isn't it? It's, you know, even if they're not meaning to, almost subconsciously,
yeah.
I think it would just be a human reaction to, I hate to use the phrase, switch off. And you look at the way Forest are playing now, they're not really playing a great deal different to how they have done all season. They're still, You know, I think, as I said earlier, I think you could compare the game at Sheffield Wednesday and the effort levels and the way the game went with so many games that Forest have played over the course of the season. So I don't think there's a noticeable switch off at all from Forest. But, I think it is a human reaction. And that sort of thing can happen when you get to the end of the season, when things aren't on the line anymore. And you're right, Matt, there are a lot of players who have uncertain futures, really, with the situation at Forest, whether they be out of contract, whether they are on loan and don't really know what the future might hold, whether they be in contract but they've got their eye on going somewhere else. Or what's interesting for me is that, having spoken to Chris Hughton just last week, actually, and actually heard him say in press conferences over the last couple of weeks, really, that he's decided, he knows now. And I suspect that the players know as well. You know, whatever, you know, they're not going to be able to change his mind over the last few games about whether he's decided they're going to stay or he wants, you know, he'd be happy for them to move on. So I think it's always an interesting stage at this stage of the season. And I do think we're shaping up again. You know, you look at every summer, it seems, or every transfer window at Forest, it seems that whenever they come up, we always say, well, there's a big summer coming up, there's a big transfer window coming up, and it kind of feels that way again. It does feel as if there may well be big changes made by Chris Hughton over the course of this summer. I think if he's successful in changing things over the summer, as he was in January, then I do think that Forest have got a decent season ahead of them next season, because I think the changes made by Chris Hughton in January certainly have improved Forest over the second half of the season and ultimately got them safe with a couple of games to spare.
Do you think there are 100% attacking changes, Colin? I mean, Chris, the right-back situation will need to be resolved, whether it's Christie or someone else, but would you think all the signings are going to be in the top third of the pitch, probably?
I would imagine that that's where his priority will be, yeah, for obvious reasons. You know, the reasons we've talked about before, that goals have been the thing that's been hard to come by. And that's not just down to goal scorers, that's down to goal creativity as well. It's down to, you know, the chances being created. I think he'll look for more creativity. I think he'll probably look for a bit more pace, and he'll certainly look for more goals. And that was the situation that he had in January. And I think he did, he did look for some creativity. He got it in Krivinovic, and okay, he may not have had the best of, goals or assists returned, but I think he and Garner have made Forest more creative. They make things happen on the pitch more than was happening before they came in. But I think, you know, yes, I do think it will be the same sort of thing. There's obviously a huge question mark, as there is, I think, when we go into any transfer window, over whether or not Forest are going to be able to keep hold of their prized assets. And of course, the most prized asset at the moment is Joe Worrall. Loads of talk about him, as there always is whenever we go into any transfer window. I think as long as they can keep him, then largely defensively, he'll be quite happy, I think, with the situation that he's got. Yes, there are issues. Does he go in for Cyrus Christie on a full-time basis, on a permanent basis? What happens with Yuri Ribeiro, who is out of contract? So there are one or two issues to sort, but I think by and large he'll be happy defensively if he can keep Joe Worrall, and therefore his priority will, yes, be on the other end of the pitch.
I'm not blowing smoke up your backside here, Nathan, because you're here, but they do look like a team that misses a Nathan Tyson type energetic, pacey player to me. There's a comment here from Richard Ottaway about the off the ball work that yourself and Grant Hall did, and he talks about pace and dynamism. Dynamism probably being the key word as well there. Is that something that struck you in the occasions you've watched Forest this season? They're a bit static, maybe, I suppose.
Yeah, just sometimes you just need that player. I'm still trying to do it now at the moment, just try and stretch the defence as much as I possibly can, because football's changed a lot over the years and more technical teams want to play in between the lines and stuff. So for me, it's always been you need someone there to stretch them and then gain possession up there, hold it up, the kind of the ugly side of the game. You need someone to do that, and it's not just Forest. It's up and down in the Championship and filtering into League One and League Two. It's getting a bit too pretty, where there's times where you do have to roll your sleeves up and get down and dirty and get aggressive, run hard. And, you know, sometimes fans don't like it, but sometimes you just need to have that one player that can actually do that, especially up top, who can run in behind, stretch the defence, because defenders don't want to run back towards their own goal. They like everything all in front of them. If you've got someone constantly running in behind, it's a problem. So, you know, you see, I mean, Lyle Taylor, he can do that. He's a proven goal scorer in obviously in League One and League Two. But obviously, I believe there's still a lot more to come from him. But I think Forrest just obviously needs maybe one or two extra additions to up top, especially to help with a goal, especially if someone who's proven to be a 20-plus goal scorer. Danny's got that in the locker as well. So it's not all doom and gloom, though, at Forest. Like I said before, the squad looks very, very good. But like Colin said, he knows the players that he needs to keep. And, you know, having someone up top that can do the nasty side of things and have everyone working off them, that'll be a massive bonus for him.
So which players are here next season, Colin? I mean, Nathan mentions Taylor, who's not really worked out as we hoped. Graben is 33 and got a year left. And Murray, I suppose Murray's probably going to go. And then you've got Knockhart behind him, Carvalho uncertainty, Amiobi's out of contract. Do you see a vastly different front four or front five players next season?
I think that's going to be the interesting question. Sammy Amiobi obviously hasn't featured over the last few weeks due to injury. And as you say, he's one of the players that's out of contract. There aren't actually too many who play regularly who are out of contract. Yuri Ribeiro, of course, just come back into the side as he ends. But yes, in terms of those attacking positions, clearly they've still got the contracted players in Lyle Taylor and Lewis Graben. And as you say, Glenn Murray, I'm not sure whether or not he'd stay for another season. He was only signed on a short-term basis until the end of the season. Carvalho's an interesting one. I don't think he's been getting rave reviews at all in Spain, and obviously he wasn't getting rave reviews in the UK either before Forrest allowed him to go out on loan. But then again, Chris Hughton's not seen him, and we talk about the creativity in that number 10 role. Maybe Chris Hughton will have a look at him in pre-season. Unless Chris has got his own ideas about, you know, a player that he is definitely sure about that he wants to bring in. But I think, you know, you look at some of those teams who are on in the top six, and you look at the pace and the both pace and creativity. I mean, Emi Buendia, you know, is not a player that most teams are going to have in their side. I know that. But you look at him winning Championship Player of the Year, and he's just one that Norwich have got. But, you know, you add a Dowell in there, you had a Campbell in there as well for Norwich, and they've got that creativity. You look at the front three for Watford, for instance, and you see the pace and power that they've got. And you can kind of see how far off that Forest are, albeit that they've got some players that on their day you think can really shine. I just think on a consistent basis, you look at those teams in the top six and you see their attacking threat, and you think that, you know, that's where Chris Hughton wants to be. That's where he needs to be. And I think probably it will probably be new faces that he's looking at to try and give them that on a more consistent basis.
If you think back through what's now quite a lengthy career, Nathan, what's the best attacking lineup that you've played in, and what do you think was the kind of key to that success?
It's a tough one because obviously getting promoted with Forest, I was up top on my own, and then you had the likes of Chris Cohen just having that number 10 role. It's a tough one. Obviously being part of, like, obviously with Ernie and Dexter up top, and I had to shift out to playing on the left. That was a joy of playing because you knew if you got the ball anywhere to Ernie in the box around his feet, he's going to score. Dexter for me was one of those players that he was really good in the air, and he could finish as well. So, you know, they were up there. Another lineup actually kind of quite comical, really. We had myself, Bayouac and Fenwar and Craig McKell Smith. I think we were the oldest front line in the whole of Football League, combined age of like 107. So yeah, it was quite enjoyable. And you know, I remember seeing a couple of old teammates who were saying, "Oh, is this the retirement home here?" and that stuff. So it was enjoyable. But me and Mikael Smith were just runners, and we just worked well off Bayo, and we got promoted that season as well. So yeah, it's a bit of a mix up, really. I can't really pick out ones, but yeah, for me it was out of them two teams that are most successful.
What do you need then? Is it a bit of everything to actually hurt teams? You can't be too one dimensional then.
No, like you said, like Connor says, creativity is it's a massive factor, but you need the runners to help the creative players find the space. There's no point everything being played in front of you, because you're not going to go anywhere. You're just going to keep going side to side, and before you know it, you lose the ball, you get broken down and get countered on. And the teams that are successful in this league, they know how to counter quick, and they know how to punish teams for mistakes. For me, it's all about pace and power. If you've got the pace up there, up top, it's always going to cause defenders problems. And then you've got the creative players that are feeding that and giving it to what I call the match winners, the money men at the top. So you've got to have a mixture. You can't have all pace and power, because then you miss out on the creativity. You've got to have a mixture between the two. Like Colin said, the creative players that you have before is very, very good, but they just need that extra someone running in behind, someone doing the hard work, someone, you know, busting the gut to create space for someone else. It's not necessarily making a run in the channel or making a run behind for yourself. You're doing it for the better of the team. You're creating space for someone else, and as soon as you do that, things click together as a team, and you know you get the best out of each other from there. So it's not, I mean, it's easier to talk about here, and it's easier said than done, but you know, you get the gist of it. You know, football doesn't have to be complicated, and there's too many managers and coaches out there that complicate the game. So
what's Hacking Fenwar like to play with as a character?
Do you know what he's great guy, really great guy. I can't say anything more but positive things about him, because he keeps the change room together. If you have an issue on the pitch, off the pitch, he's there. He's great around the lads, great to have around. And that's why, I mean, to be fair, that's mainly down to Gareth down at Wickham. He's really, that change room is the best change room that I've ever been in. Great bunch of lads, like-minded lads. Everyone wants to succeed. They're always the underdogs, and hence why they're still trying to fight now. And let's be honest, the goal difference has killed them. But you know, I'm proud of them, because that's the fight that you have. Like, if Forest were playing Wickham on Saturday, I think Wickham beat Forest, to be honest. Mm. And that's because Wickham, they don't know when they're down. Sheffield Wednesday just looks, like Colin said, they look a team that look like they're already down anyway. But Bayo was a fantastic guy. I really enjoyed him. So, I'll give him a shout out.
How do you get that resolve into Forest squad then, Nathan, when you keep signing 10 players a season? I mean,
the problem is you keep chopping and changing managers. It's been a problem. When was the last time Forest were in the playoffs or anywhere near the playoffs? You know, you've got to look back quite a while now, and it's just because there's been chops and changes to managers, and it's not just Forest, it's every team. These owners come in, and what I don't get is that they're businessmen. They've started up from nothing and taken their time to earn their hundreds of thousands, millions, whatever it is, and that takes time. Football's no different. Being a football manager is no different. You need time. As soon as you come in, you need to get rid of the players that you don't want, for one, which means the club's got to pay them up or ship them on or whatever. And then the manager needs to bring the players in, and then he needs to gel them all together. That doesn't just happen in a week. Sometimes you might see a couple of weeks reaction where you go and beat them for like you know, 3, 4, 5 games, and then suddenly it pitters away, and then people will start asking questions. It's like, well, no, you've had the initial, like, spark, but after that, it's now long-term thinking of gelling the squad together. It takes time. It's not an overnight fix, and that's the problem. Owners just want success straight away. They want success. Like, if you sign a manager in, say, in the summer, they want to be promoted by Christmas. That doesn't make sense. You've still got the other half of the season to go. But owners see that. That's all they see. And then they listen to the fans. The fans are not happy or disgruntled or whatever. That plays effect in their decision-making as well. You'd be surprised. So with Forest, it's always been the same problem. Too many managers, too many players. If you have a business and you've got too many employees coming in and out, then it's not going to succeed. It's just going to fall flat and you're not going to go anywhere. So that's the problem I see with Forest. It's not necessarily been the managers. Well, maybe sometimes, but not necessarily. And I just think Chris needs time. He needs time to build that team and then judge him by the end of next season. Forest at the moment, could you say that they've had a good season this year? No, it's just been the same as the last couple of years, maybe. There's not really been anything about it. They're not really going anywhere. And you don't want to get stuck in that rut where you're just constantly wasting money on new managers, new players, the turnover. It's diabolical at times, and it's frustrating as a former player who admires the football club. But it's hard work to watch sometimes, and I just hope they've got the manager now, in my eyes, that can really push the club forward to where it needs to be. If you want to get to the top, then you've got to start back in, and you've got to, as an owner, if I was an owner, I'd be like, look, you've got the whole season, then we'll review it. Like, just don't finish in the bottom half of the table. I want us up near there at the top. Like, even then, if you're finishing mid-table, we're still better than what you're doing now. So it's, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, that's all very sensible and reasonable. But that doesn't happen at Forest, does it, Colin?
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more with what Nathan's just said. There was forgive me, I'm not going to be able to remember exactly which manager it was because there have been so many over the last few years. But there was a manager, and I remember looking at the squad and working out which manager had signed each player in the squad. And whoever the manager was at the time was stood in front of a dressing room made up of players who had been signed by 8 different managers. So that's 8 different philosophies, and 8 different strategies, outlooks on the game from 8 different managers, 8 different types of player who've been bought in. And then your manager number 9 in however many years it was comes in and is looking around and has got, well, that player who was brought in by so-and-so in under that style, then those players over there were brought in to play under that style. That's impossible to gel for anybody. And it's no wonder that there hasn't been the success on the pitch when you throw that into the mix. It's a series of circumstances, and it has been over the course of the years, and there are different reasons why managerial changes are made, and some of them feel a bit too hasty, and some of them feel as if they are made at about the right sort of time. But it's impossible for any manager to try and gel a squad that has been made by a load of different managers. And that happens when you change every year or 2 or 3 times a year, as has been the case with Forest. And I think when you look at what Chris Hughton did in his only transfer window to date, which was the January one, he promised when he went in that he wasn't going to make wholesale changes. He was just going to, you know, tinker with it a bit, make 2 or 3 changes. And I think you look at the players he brought in. Glenn Murray, of course, has not made such an impact recently, but he made an immediate impact when he did come in. You look at James Garner, you look at Kravinovic. They have made a decent difference to Forest over the second half of the season. And I think when that's your evidence that this is what Chris Hughton can do in one transfer window, which is just open for a month, then let's see what he can do and what he can build over the course of the summer. But again, you know, as Nathan's just said, if things aren't going well after the first half a dozen games next season, why would you at that point throw it all out again and get a new manager in who doesn't know these players and hasn't brought these players in to work to a specific way of playing? So it's about patience. And Chris Hughton has got the history. He's got the pedigree behind him. He's been there. He's done it. He's shown us the evidence over his first transfer window that he can bring in players to improve what was a struggling side. And I think, you know, it's going to, as we said earlier, it's going to be a very interesting summer. But absolutely what Nathan's just said, Forest need to stick with a manager at some point and give him an opportunity to build something, because it doesn't happen straight away, and it won't happen straight away for any manager.
So as kind of a two-part follow-up to that, Colin, do you think this has been, I mean, you've covered Forest for 25 seasons now, maybe, has this been more than that?
April was the 30th anniversary of my first game.
Okay, so you've seen a lot of Forest. So, has this been the most kind of mundane season that you covered? I can't, aside from that, if you took the pandemic out of it, I don't think many fans would remember this season. And then the second part to that would be, is Hughton laying the foundation in kind of the slightly dull way that he has to do to actually kick on next season if given the opportunity that we just talked about?
First of all, yes, it's been the most boring season. Let's be honest, it's been boring this season. And I say that in the total knowledge and complete acceptance that I've been very lucky this season. I've been able to actually get into grounds. And, you know, there'll be a lot of fans who are watching this and say, oh, how can you moan about it being boring when you're actually seeing football? So I take that on board. But you look at the number of goals, not only that Forest have scored, but look at the number of goals they've conceded as well. I think the aggregate is about certainly the lowest in the Championship, and is probably one of the lowest in the country as well. So in terms of excitement, there hasn't been anything there. And take away fans from it as well, and the fact that it's empty grounds and sterile environments and, you know, no atmosphere. Throw in the fact that for 3 months or so I was not at the grounds and trying to commentate off TV screens with no atmos from the ground at all. And that isn't any fun, believe me. I think when you chuck all of this together, then yes, it has to be the most miserable season, I think it's fair to say. And the only saving grace really is that they did get safe and they're not even worse in the mire, like a certain team up the A52 still are going into the last day of the season. So that really is the only saving grace for this season. Now, in terms of the second half of that question, Matt, in terms of, Chris Hughton building, I think Chris Hughton has done this season what he needed to do. And he came in and he had a look and he saw Forrest making some horrible errors defensively, many of them individual errors in the first part of the season, but some of them to do with shape and organisation and all that sort of thing. And Chris Hughton did straight away, well, not straight away, it took him a little while, but he knew straight away what he needed to do. And that was make them difficult to beat, because he could see a team that isn't going to score a load of goals, that will have to win matches with only scoring one or two. And that means you've got to be absolutely tight at the other end. And I think by and large, they have been. You know, go back to that aggregate where Forest don't score many, but they don't concede many either. I think he looked at it and he thought, right, I need to make sure that we don't keep conceding two and three goals a game, because if we do, then we're not going to score enough to win those games. And that's what he did. So he concentrated on shoring things up at one end first and reducing things to a clean sheet or only conceding one goal, which gives them a chance of winning more games. And they've won probably as many as they've lost. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I think it's probably about even in terms of since he came in, wins and losses, with plenty of draws in there as well, again because of those problems at the other end of the pitch. But I think that's what he will then sort out next. As we've said, he's sorted out them defensively with what he'd already got. He tinkered with it in an offensive situation during January, and they improved during the second half of the season creatively. And the next step is to make them far more of a threat going forwards while still maintaining that base that he has already built on at the back. And that, I'm sure, is what he'll be working on during the course of the summer.
What's it been like playing in this kind of empty crowd pandemic ball, Nathan? And you're at Chesterfield now. What's it like inside a dressing room to adapt to not having fans there?
To be fair, we've got a good dressing room because we've got Mad Gavin Gunning, who literally will dance around naked while the music's being blared out. So that's our atmosphere there. We get outside and it's quiet as anything. Now, it's been tough. It has been tough. At the start of it, you're thinking, oh, it's no different to playing an under-23s or reserve team game. No atmosphere, nothing. But when you go into the grounds, you just think, oh, God, this ain't great. And I'm just lucky that, you know, playing at this level, National League level, that you don't get as many fans. But I can imagine being in the Championship, like, missing the fans. I think, you know, I was going to ask you guys a question. Do you think if fans were allowed in, do you think Forrest's performances would have stepped up even more? Because given the following that, you know, Forrest do have, I think it may be a little bit different, especially the back end of the season. And I think that can be said for a lot of other clubs in the league. But I think Forrest, the fans are just different. You know, you get that burst of energy. I was talking about it yesterday at the game, just the difference that fans make, and especially fans at Forest. They just give you that extra win, and yeah, gives me goosebumps on the back just thinking about it, to be honest, because you just don't understand until you're playing out there and you've got 30,000 fans like that roaring. It's you know, inspirational, to be honest. But it's a shame. I just feel like, would that, you know, obviously my question goes to you guys, do you think that would have made Forest any better this season? Do you think they would have finished higher up?
Yeah, I think they would. I certainly think they wouldn't have missed out on the playoffs in the horrible way they did last year. You know, that back end of the season was dreadful, and I don't think it would have happened if the City Ground had fans in it. I know that's easy to say, and I'm not. Again, as I stressed at the time, I wouldn't want to blame lack of fans for Forest missing out last season. But and who knows what might have happened if they got into the playoffs. The season might have been over anyway a week later than it actually was, because they'd have lost in the two legs. But absolutely, I think it would have made a difference to Forest. I think certain teams have been hampered in different ways. And I think it depends, doesn't it, what sort of characters you've got in the dressing room. You know, that if you've got, I've said this all along, right from last June when they first got going again, that many, many footballers at your sort of level, Nathan, and the levels you've been playing at through your career, it strikes me as you're performers, and you need that audience to perform to your best in front of. And yes, you can perform in front of nobody, but to bring the best out of you, you need that audience. You need that kind of roar, that atmosphere. And I think that to go back to how this season has been, I think that's all played into it. I just think what it's meant is that some of the key performers, if you like, you haven't seen the best of, because they need that live audience to perform in front of, and it kind of hasn't happened. I also think Nigel Clough made a very good point a few weeks ago, where he said he thinks the football at League Two level has been different as well, because as soon as a team gets 1-0 up, if you're a home side and you get 1-0 up,
yeah,
with no fans there, you've got no real need to go and press the game for a second goal or a third goal. Whereas if you've got the home fans there behind you, you probably wouldn't sit on a 1-0 lead. But he said that more and more teams, as soon as you get 1-0 up, they just shut the game up. They shut the game down, and that's it. They're quite happy with that. That's why you're seeing so many games decided by one goal across the leagues, I think, this year. So I think that plays into it as well. And I think that's led for, frankly, actually, some duller games than you would get otherwise with fans in. So in so many ways, all of that contributes to the question that both Nathan has just put, whether or not Forest would have been better. Yes, I think they would have been. And what Matt asked before that about, you know, has this been the dullest season? Yes, it has, for all of those reasons, I think.
Yeah. I agree with what Colin says. I think they would have made the playoffs last season with fans. And also, yeah. I think players like you say, Cole, about Graben, Knockhart, players like that, I think they thrive on, maybe the adoration might not be the right word, but they enjoy being the showman. And lads like Yates and Worrell are going to do the same thing no matter what. If there's a brick wall, they'll run through it. If there's people watching it, or if they won't, you know, head down straight forwards. So, yeah, I think that's right. From what Cole said there, Nathan, as well, about have the games you played in been different then tactically in terms of what he says about playing 1-0s and that kind of stuff?
We played Bromley at home a couple of weeks ago, and they went 1-0 up, and seriously, they might as well just all camped out in the 18-yard box. It was horrendous. We ended up losing the game 2-1, I think it was, or 2-0. No, sorry, 2-0. But they just set up shop. But we've just found it now. Even the top teams are doing it. You know, they get 1-0 up, and that's it. Bang, come and break us down. There's no fans here to urge anyone on. Also, one thing that I've noticed as well, you find that players can influence a referee even more now. We tend to find that now. Players are crowding around the referees again because they don't have the fans shouting at the referee or linesman, linesperson, whoever makes that bad decision. So now players are now starting to influence officials' decisions. Now, we've had some criminal decisions against us over the last month or so, and it's cost us games, cost us points, to be honest. But it'd be interesting to ask you guys if that's been similar. Have the officials been a bit off it as well throughout the season in the Championship? I've seen one or two decisions in a couple of Wickham games that I've watched, but other than that, I've not really had to get a chance to see any more after that.
I think, I need to choose my words carefully here, but I think we've seen a few referees this season who've refereed in an entirely different way because the stadiums are empty.
Who might like the
attention of 30,000 people on them, and when they're not there, they are far quieter in terms of the way they've refereed the game. I wouldn't mention any names, but regular listeners might know who I'm particularly thinking about. there are one or two that over the years have not impressed. I'm not sure they've got quite as many. I would probably think mistakes wise, it's probably about the same from what I've seen in terms of, you know, howling errors from the referee. How's he not given that? But I think maybe they're less highlighted because you haven't got 30,000 people screaming at that ref for making that mistake, for getting that decision wrong. The other thing I've noticed, and Nathan, you know, this is a great one to talk to you about, is they seem to be letting a bit more go than they might normally. They seem to be far less. This might just be Forest, I don't know. But there seem to be far less cards in the game, far less bookings, yellow cards this year. Maybe that's just Forest because, I don't know, just circumstance or whatever. But you see a few decisions that you think, again, if you had 30,000 screaming at them, you know, for how bad that foul was, the referee would just get his cards out straight away. But this year, because there isn't that, they seem to have let a few things go a little bit more, and certainly on second yellow cards, I would say.
I think I agree with you. To be fair, we've had quite a few this season, but in general, over the course of everyone in the league and games, I think there's been a lot less. You know, come to think of it, it's a good shout, that is, because like I said to you, when you've got that noise of the fans screaming, and then you've got a player trying to talk to the referee can't really hear that player. You can ignore that player very easy. But now, the referee hears everything that's been said and stuff. I think they are reluctant to let more things go, but they seem to give up more fouls, but obviously less cards. So maybe that's something they spoke about in their classrooms or whatever. But the levels between where I'm at the moment, where Forest is at the moment, the levels between the officials is there's a big gulf between the two. So,
did you see the one with Peterborough and Lincoln at the weekend, the penalty in the 95th minute?
Yes, I did. Yeah, did it?
Yeah.
I was trying to work out what
I couldn't work out what happened. I couldn't work out
because did he sweep his legs? Did he pull him on the arm? I couldn't work out.
He just kind of ran into him, but it was the attacking player ran into the defender and the ref gave a penalty. It struck me as the worst penalty I've seen for a long time, but that's saying something, yeah. I'm going to change the tack before we start running out of time for two more topics I want to cover quickly. This is not fair on you, Nathan, as a former Derby player, but I'll ask Colin first. Who's going down at the weekend, Colin? Do you think?
I've got to be honest. I didn't see enough from Sheffield Wednesday last week to think that they can go to Derby. And I know Derby are in shocking form as well. Is it six defeats in a row now from Derby?
Yeah.
And a point in any of them would have got them safe. And they keep going 1-0 up, don't they, and then losing the game as well. So I know there's all sorts of issues there for them and they're a side who are struggling as well. But did I see enough from Sheffield Wednesday to think they can go there, get themselves in front and then hold on to that lead? And I'm not sure I did, if I'm honest. I know Forest fans would like me to say that, yes, I can really see Sheffield Wednesday going there and putting Derby to the sword. But really not sure about it. I think Derby will have enough to see off the threat of Sheffield Wednesday, which will keep Derby safe, which would relegate Sheffield Wednesday. And as we speak, of course, Rotherham have got their game in hand tonight, which is going to make a big difference if they can win against Luton tonight. And that would really put more pressure on Derby on the final day as well. So I think if I'm honest and you put me on the spot, I would probably say the three that are in the bottom now will be the three that get relegated and Derby will be all right on the final day.
Yeah, I think so as well. Sheffield Wednesday don't know if they can win a game to me. I suppose Rotherham are the X factor. Go on, I'll ask you, Nathan, who do you think is going down, even though I'm unfairly putting you on the spot?
Wickham will stay up. They'll score 13 goals.
You've got to say that, haven't you? Yeah. I forgot about that.
I agree with Colin, but you know, I think it'd be a question to ask the Forest fans. You know, obviously, yeah, they would love to see Derby go down and all that stuff, but then you miss that fixture. You know, there's two fixtures next year, and especially with fans supposedly starting to come back, hopefully they do. It'd be a massive, you know, massive game if they were to stay up. But I agree with Colin. I think the bottom three that are there now are going to go down, unfortunately, for Wickham.
Yeah, those Forest Derby fixtures can get a bit lively, to be fair, on occasion.
Yeah, it, like I said, I think the Forest fans generally, if hand on heart, I think they would miss having Derby, not having those games. I mean, what, you're going to play them in pre-season, done that before, and it's not, doesn't mean anything as much, should I say. But it's just a case of, I think I'd rather have them in the league and just have those two games, because those two games, you know, I really enjoyed them on both sides. Maybe one more than the other, but but yeah, I enjoyed them. And then I think Forest would be a bit disappointed, really, that they don't have that rivalry.
Just finished by talking about the social media boycott then, which we took part in at the Postar company. I know the BBC didn't because of the Royal Charter, Colin. I don't think they were able to. Nathan, you've been on here before talking about your experiences of racism, which is one factor of online abuse. I mean, where do you stand on the boycott then, and what needs to happen in terms of eradicating all these problems from not just social media, but societally as well? A big question, sorry.
Well, we all know what needs to be done. The social media companies, they need to have some, there has to be some sort of ID, and we all know what that needs to be done. Obviously, education comes into play as well. That's down to the schooling and, you know, getting as many people into the schools to talk about experiences and how to be kind and stuff. But ultimately, it falls down onto the social media companies. You can't just abuse someone, get up in the morning and abuse someone, and then that account gets closed down, and then you can freely open another account from the same device whatever. That's the problem there, to be honest. And the social media companies, they're not going to do much about it because it costs them money. When it comes down to money, that's, money makes the world go round at the end of the day. They're not bothered about people's feelings. And if they were, then they would have done something about it in the first place. But I don't want to be too negative about it, but it's what it says on the can is it's what it is. It's just the way the world is. Like I said, if their pockets are going to get lighter by not having that many people and other people making up all these other accounts, you know, if they're going to lose all that, then they're going to lose money. So that's what it comes down to.
What impact, you spoke about being racism and you've been, you know, the messages that you received when you were at Forest after the Yeovil game and just in general life. I mean, can you speak to people about what impact that has on you? Because, you know, it's not happened to me. So it can't go unchecked and noticed, can it? It must have an effect on you, even if, you know, you try to shut it out with people giving you abuse. You can't ignore it all the time, can you?
You can't. There's, like I said to you, it's down to them to... you know, I just don't know. You know, I think I've just got to the point, personally, got to the point of it's happening every day. And unfortunately, that's a bad thing to think about it, because now is that just the new norm now? Like, we've all got used to lockdown now and coronavirus. We've all got used to it now. We know what it is. We know what X, Y, and Z. But, you know, to accept abuse, I'm not saying I'm accepting it, if it ever happens and stuff, and accept it in the past, I've just kind of got on with it in my life. But there's a lot more that needs to be done. Like I said, education is the key to it. And, you know, the generations that are coming up, you know, you start to see, it just comes down to the parents teaching your kids what's right and wrong. You just can't go up and go and abuse people. I don't know how you can do it. It's like, I just don't get how you can get up in the morning and just go and abuse someone just because they had a bad game. That's, you know, if my postie goes and drops my letter off down at number 99, and I live at number 2, I'm not going to go around and go and charge at him and think, well, I'm going to go on Twitter, I'm going to go and abuse him for dropping the wrong letter down. Just grow up, you know. That's my view on it, really. But like I said, there's so much stuff that needs to be done and changed in terms of social media. Until that happens, until they take responsibility, then you start to see change. But look, change is slow in my eyes, and you know, we just got to keep pushing until we get what we want.
Last one on this then to you, Nathan. Do you see a different world developing for you? You've got kids who are they like late teenagers or something? Is it different for them?
Well, I've got twin daughters who are 18, son, eldest boy who's 11, and my youngest just turned 2 yesterday, so got a good range. In terms of my seeing it from my daughters, you just see the world is changing, and it's good to see, but there's still, I'd like to think by the time my eldest boy is 18, going on to 20, etc., I like to think that the world is changed for him, and by the time my youngest gets up to that age, I'd like to think that the world has changed considerably. But like I said, it takes time. It's slow. It's a slow process.
True. Colin, it's a different. It's not apples and oranges, obviously. But you're not on social media, and I suppose is one of the reasons that you just don't need the abuse. I guess is that one of the things that puts you off.
Yeah, never been on social media on a personal level, have to use it for work, but never on a personal level have I had a social media account. And there is, you know, there are very good reasons for that. And I know that sometimes social media can do good, but I've always taken the side that why would I put myself there? Why would I have a social media account so that people could be abusive to me? Now, that's me looking at it from the wrong angle, because people shouldn't be on there and be allowed to be abusive to me. That's exactly what Nathan's just been saying. And why shouldn't, you know, it so happens to me that I'm not bothered about not having a social media account. But if you want one, why should you have to feel, well, I might not get one because I fear the abuse I'm going to get. You know, I, I, it's, I mean, you're right. The BBC was unable to get behind the campaign because of its royal charter and its editorial guidelines. But you know, I just say what I said earlier in the season or in previous seasons. Whenever something has been made public, you know, an incident has been made public, I'm amazed that in this day and age, people cannot be made more accountable for their actions on social media, and that it is so easy to make accounts that are anonymous. I find that extraordinary that can still happen.
True. Yeah. Right. I think we'll leave it there for this week then. One more game to go, and we'll be back this time next week to talk about Forest v Preston, and then we'll look ahead to the summer and do some former player interviews. We've got some interesting ones lined up. So thanks to everyone who watched along and put comments in the comment section and listens on iTunes and YouTube. Do subscribe and give us a good rating because it really helps. And I like reading nice comments, not negative comments that we've just been talking about on social media. Right. Colin, thank you very much. And Nathan, happy birthday again. And thank you very much, gentlemen. Cheers. It's great to have you with us. And we shall see everyone soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening.